It's pretty commonplace nowadays that if you want to send a peanut butter sandwich or a bag of almonds or cashews in your kid's lunch to school, you can't, because schools typically ban all of those kinds of products. No nuts at school because of allergies. And, look, it's an understandable concern. And for some kids, exposure to peanuts or other nuts can be pretty serious, maybe even life-threatening. But are bans the way to go? There's some interesting news on this front. In Whitehorse, of all places, an elementary school there has ended its ban on nuts. Ecole Emily Tremblay has moved away from a total ban and instead is focusing on allergy awareness. The principal says, "We're not compromising the safety of kids. We're taking a different approach." That not allowing nuts and peanuts in class gave students a false sense of security. And that's an interesting point. Now, what's worth noting here is that we've got some good guidelines and advice on this front from an expert panel that studied this issue a few years ago. So why have schools been so reluctant in moving in this direction? Why is the school in Whitehorse kind of at the forefront of this? Well, joining us to talk more about these issues, very pleased to welcome the program here this morning, Dr. Susan Wasserman, an allergist and clinical immunologist at McMaster University, was the lead author on these guidelines published back in 2021. Professor Wasserman, good to have you with us here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So let me get your thoughts on the approach that this Whitehorse school is taking. Do they seem to have it right in your view?
Well, look, it's certainly a beginning and it's early days, but, I'd say that, to be fair, the guidelines, which found no evidence for bans on certain foods being effective, we had to come to grips with the fact that the evidence is just not out there. Often the science is not high quality, and any recommendations that we made, we had to say were conditional. We think that the benefit of not instituting bans is there, but we're not 100% sure. So I think that what this principal did is what the guidelines recommended. The evidence doesn't support it. Work with your school and see what works for you. Whitehorse is a small school of 200 yeah. children. Probably everybody knows each other and what they're allergic to. So hopefully they've worked out a system that will work for them. And hopefully all the safety issues and education that was discussed is there as, a good background to what's happening.
So in terms of why the bans don't work, because maybe we do get a false sense of security. Okay, there's a ban, so somehow that magically keeps everything out. But what do we miss when it comes to the reality or the actual practice of this?
Well, the reality is that we don't have the science that has ever studied it rigorously. We didn't find any good information that compared schools that sort of had rigorous food bans in place with those that have not instituted these sorts of measures. And in fact, where we did find data, sometimes schools that banned even had more reactions taking place within the school. So whether they work or they don't work, based on the best quality evidence, we can't find evidence that it does work. The science just isn't there to support it, but the science is not high quality.
And as we mentioned, that doesn't mean ignoring the issue, right? And then so the comments from the principal sort of speak to how they're taking a different approach. So what are the best practices?
Well, look, the best practices are that if you're going to go this route, and many of us who did these guidelines sort of believe in going forward with food allergy management, the education needs to be in place. Kids need to wash their hands. The table surfaces need to be cleaned. You do have to have good supervision during eating. Teachers and other personnel need to know what to look for if an allergic reaction is taking place. They need to know how to use an epinephrine auto-injector and not be afraid to use it. And a lot of this training has to go on continuously. It's not just showing your teachers once a year. Often people forget. So there really is a lot that needs to go on. People still have to realize that this is potentially a very serious problem. So if you're going to go the route of no food restriction, at least know all the measures that have to be in place to keep your kids safe.
So, and I mean, as you say, schools are going to have their own situation. If you got a school where there are no allergies, then that's a different approach than maybe with a school that has a higher number of them. So,
no, you're absolutely right. And this was also recommended by our guideline, that everybody has to adapt what they do to their own context. The evidence may not be there, but, you know, you do have to have all the other measures in place. I don't know if no food restriction is going to eventually take off in every school. I mean, if you go to a downtown Toronto school, and that's what I'm more familiar with, I mean, there can be 1,000 or 12,000, you know, or 1,200 children there. Not everybody knows each other. They may not know the allergies. There may be a lot of other issues which make food allergy a lower priority. So, you know, everyone has to adapt to their own context and do what they can to protect these students. It'll take a while to take off. This is certainly a change of pace as we've known it for the past 15 to 20 years that I've been doing this. And whether every school adopts this measure, we don't know. I mean, it's going to be very contextual.
You know, the broader question of why we seem to have so many peanut or nut allergies in society, and I know, you know, there was some interesting research out of Israel looking at the connection between early exposure and rates of allergies. Do we have a better understanding of these issues, do you think?
I think our understanding is that it's very complex.
Yeah.
I think that what may have led to this problem in the first place is the fact that once we saw allergies starting to rise, we did what we knew best. Avoid it, don't introduce it. It means that you will never become allergic. For the longest time, mothers wouldn't eat peanut in pregnancy. Babies were told not to eat peanuts until they approached childhood, 3-4 years of age. But all of these measures actually led to far more allergy. So now our food recommendations have changed. There should be no food restriction, certainly not for the mothers. And babies, especially those with eczema and other risk factors, should be introducing these foods early in order to prevent allergy. So that's just part of it. Other things are, you know, we think that because we live too cleanly, the body has become lazy, it's become more allergic, we're no longer just busy fighting infection. It may have to do with vitamin D. It may have to do with pollution. There's so many contributors, but by far, I think the biggest thing that we have found out is that early introduction is preventative.
Very interesting. So, you know, it's been a while. I mean, you published these guidelines in 2021, and here we have sort of one school that we can point to that thinks this is the right approach. I mean, it's probably all kinds of reasons why schools are reluctant, but is this maybe a tipping point? Are you hoping to see some more momentum now?
Well, look, it certainly may be a beginning. It's brought things back into focus. I mean, you're right. It took us 5 years to publish these guidelines. The amount of work was incredible, lots of stakeholders. And then after they were published, we all got preoccupied with COVID. You know, food allergy was really not on the radar. And now that this Whitehorse school has taken the first step, there may be others, you know, where parents approach the school administration and say, listen, let's give it a try. Is this the way forward with food allergy? You know, everybody will have to do their job to see how it suits their school specifically. And, you know, you made mention before about a false sense of security. The amount of anxiety that most of these parents have at the best of times is really huge. And that's probably what, you know, has prevented this going forward. But it may be time to at least start thinking about it and seeing what we can do.
Yeah, well said. We'll leave it there. Dr. Wasserman, thanks so much for joining us here today. Appreciate your insight on this.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.